hanging around waiting for the instructions to start. And several days went by, and I went to the teacher and said, "Well, you know, what am I meant to be doing here?" And he said, looked at me really rather puzzled and said, "Sit down and let go." A lot of the time in our lives, we would love to be able to do this. Probably less in those moments when we're really enjoying some blissful fantasy, or delighting in lunch, or savoring some hard-won moment of peace. But definitely, in those moments when we feel gripped by some obsessive mind storm, some painful thought pattern, or a difficult memory. And also in those moments when we're simply bored by the really repetitive voice of the commentator. Then letting go seems actually the most attractive proposition on offer today. And it's a curious and observable thing in our lives that in the midst of the painful and the difficult, we become enthusiastic advocates of renunciation. And in the midst of the pleasant and the delightful and the exciting, we suffer convenient bouts of amnesia. Now, why is this teaching so predominant? Why are we so endlessly entreated and invited to let go, to let be? I mean, do we let go in order to punish ourselves? Do we let go in order to deprive ourselves? Do we let go so that we can cast ourselves into some state of experience that is painful? Do we let go in order to leave ourselves in a place of wanting and neediness? No. It's not why we let go. Letting go is about letting go of suffering. We don't speak about letting go of compassion, of loving kindness, of balance, heartfulness, of equanimity, of wisdom. We speak about letting go so that these very qualities can emerge and ripen within ourselves. It's a little bit what Guy was speaking about last night, of the two wings in this practice, of wisdom and compassion. And sometimes we too, you know, find ourselves reaching for the compassion, reaching for the loving kindness, reaching for the heartfulness, as if this is some kind of state of experience that we can somehow manufacture, or some destination that we're going to arrive at. But actually, what we do is we let go of the obstacles that stand in the way of those very qualities that already lie within us, so that we can connect with them more deeply, embody them more wholeheartedly in our lives. Now, in moments when we feel a lot of pleasure or delight or excitement, it's true that we are probably less aware of the kind of painfulness that is intrinsic to holding. It's also true that in moments when we feel very lost and very entangled or overwhelmed, we are profoundly aware of the pain that is involved in grasping. And that as there is a movement of grasping towards anything at all in this life, something externally or something in our inner world, our thought, a feeling, a memory, that we are equally grasped by it. In these moments of being aware of that pain of grasping. We do very often search for a way to let go and puzzle over how this happens. How do we let go of something? And the answer to that often feels very elusive to us. Now, this capacity to let be, to let go, it has very much to do with the whole process of transformation and opening. And the path of meditation is very profoundly and implicitly concerned with change and transformation. You know, we don't practice meditation in order to become simply a kind of expert at some form or technique. We certainly don't practice meditation in order to stay the same so that we can become more intimately acquainted with, you know, repetitive emotional patterns and mind storms and opinions and beliefs and aching bodies. We don't do that. We don't practice meditation because we still subscribe to a belief system that holds that happiness is going to be found through endlessly modifying the furniture and the details of our lives and our world. We practice because this is a path that leads to happiness, that leads to profound sensitivity and compassion, that leads to well-being and balance, that leads to understanding and freedom. These are the sparks of inspiration that draw us to this path, and it is clear that this is a path of movement. It is a path of change. Hopefully, through this path, we move from confusion to clarity, from conflict to ease, from fear to a place of trust, from discontent to a place of happiness within ourselves. Hopefully in this path we move from a place where we feel limited and contracted to a place of understanding where there's a much greater depth of freedom. And yet in traveling this path, I think for many people there's a very deep frustration that is often felt. And that frustration is about a kind of gap or separation we can be aware of within ourselves that we don't quite know how to bridge. It often feels like both that there's a gap between our intellectual knowledge and our experiential understanding. You know, for example, if we were to sit down here and talk about the cause of suffering, well, didn't we know this? This is not news. It's not even something we discovered at IMS. You know, we often know very well our own stories and what leads to suffering. And isn't it frustrating when we keep living them out? There's often a frustration between the gap that sometimes we find between all of those qualities that we're aspiring for and seeking for and the reality of our present moment experience. We want calmness. We even really have a lot of faith that there is such a state. And yet on a moment-to-moment level, we may find ourselves continuing to be reactive or entangled. We find ourselves longing for spaciousness and peace. And yet even in the very same moment, find ourselves, you know, engaged in this eternal argument with ourselves and with the world. We long and value acceptance and generosity of heart towards ourselves and others, and yet at the same time we can feel that we somehow landed with this permanent critic that is, you know, somewhat obsessed with its own judgments. And these gaps, this separation, I mean, it is a painful experience. Acknowledge it's a gap that we sometimes feel helpless in. We know that there's a way, perhaps, that is not so caught up in this maze of entanglement, but that knowledge really doesn't feel to help us too much all the time. We also see the limitation of some of our strategies that we've engaged in our lives. We see that, you know, ignoring what is happening in our lives, the conflicts or confusions, or denying them or avoiding them, you know, it's limited effectiveness. We find that our strategies of trying to control or resist also have limited effectiveness. And sometimes, actually, as we begin to wake up in our life, you know, it even can come to feel that awareness is something of a curse. You know, I don't know who invented that statement that ignorance is bliss, but I suspect it was a frustrated meditator. You know, because at least before we were aware of what was happening in us and the forces that moved us and the ways we got entangled, at least, you know, before we were aware of our greed and our aversion and we knew what they were, you know, sometimes it seemed like maybe we had more peace in our lives or we got away with more. You know, we got away with more rather than this experience, you know, when we kind of go back for that second plate of lunch and there's that little voice that says, you don't need this, you know. You know, we can't even enjoy avoidance anymore. And that becomes something of an issue for us, you know. I remember someone who was once in a long-term retreat with me in England, you know, and this chocolate addiction, you know, and used to come up, especially in moments of discontent, you know, they'd want to eat chocolate, and we had a store in the village, and you know, they said, you know, they'd start out, you know, towards the store, and all the way this voice would be going with them, you know. You could just let go of this. You don't actually need this. And they'd go and buy the chocolate, and they'd say, oh, boy, you really got stuck in this one, you know. And they'd be eating the chocolate. And, you know, and the whole experience was kind of really unsatisfactory, you know. It becomes hard to enjoy avoidance. And the Buddha once said, you know, that wood can turn into ashes, but that ashes cannot turn back into wood. And this, I think, is something really descriptive of what happens within us in our practice, that as we start to wake up, we see that actually it's really difficult to go back to sleep. In exactly the same way in anymore. Now, when we see this gap between our aspirations and our reality, rather than getting lost in frustrations or judgments around that gap, it's really, I think, a little bit more helpful to ask ourselves, really, what is needed to dissolve that gap? And not to think in terms of ideals, you know, that yeah, when I'm enlightened, I'll dissolve that gap. Not to think in terms of ideas, but to think on a moment, to reflect on a moment-to-moment level. You know, in the midst of confusion, where is clarity? In the midst of conflict, where is peace? In the midst of agitation, where is calmness? If we can begin to understand the process of entanglement, we also begin to understand the path of disentanglement, which is equally the path of letting go, of renunciation. Not because we should, not letting go because it makes us a more spiritual person or, you know, a more successful meditator. But letting go as an act of compassion for ourselves, as a way of happiness, as a way simply of caring for our world and ourselves. Now, where does entanglement happen? It doesn't happen just because of the circumstances of our lives or because, you know, we have bad karma or, you know, because we have an off day or because we're menopausal or because we're old or because we're young or any of those things. You know, where does the entanglement happen? It happens in our consciousness. It happens in our way of seeing. So the wonderful line from the Dhammapada, where the Buddha says, "We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts we make the world. Speak or act with an impure mind, and trouble will follow you as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts we make the world. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness will follow you as your shadow unshakable. How can a troubled mind understand the way? Your worst enemy cannot harm you as much as your own thoughts unguarded. But once understood, no one can help you as much." Now, entanglement happens through misunderstanding. Disentanglement happens through understanding. Understanding the nature of disentanglement, understanding how to let go, it's not necessarily some magical revelation or some breakthrough experience, although sometimes it happens that way. Mostly our capacity to understand, to let be, to let go, is really, it's like a gift of understanding, a gift of wisdom. It's an expression of clarity, something that we carefully nurture. And there are many, actually a number of different ways in which letting go or renunciation actually happens. Now, one way in which renunciation or letting go actually happens is through a very natural and a very organic expression of calmness that develops in our practice, and we have all experienced this. On one level, meditation is always a training in letting go. You can see this as we've followed the kind of unfoldment of this practice through the retreat, you know, even beginning with the instruction of focusing upon our breathing. Well, what happens in that? Well, our inner and our outer world continues, thoughts, images, memories, ideas, plans, the whole inner catastrophe. You know, and are the instructions, well, dwell on this. You know, look for where it comes from, look for why it's there, judge it, you know, define whether it's good or bad, fight it, struggle with it, battle with it. No, not in our particular school of teaching. Some, yes. No, the instructions are very simple, aren't they? See, let be, return to the next breath. Now, what are we doing in that? You know, we're not becoming perfect breathers. We are learning an art there. We are learning an art of simplicity, the skillfulness of allowing, of not adding or subtracting anything, but letting each moment speak to us just as it is and attending to it. In that allowing and attending, we're not looking for a history and we're not looking for a future in anything that arises, but simply allowing whatever arises also to pass. Now, this practice of doing this actually really has a pretty major effect on our consciousness. You may be beginning to have a taste of that. It simplifies our inner world. Our inner world begins to calm. Our minds and our bodies begin to calm. And there's a very natural and yet also a very powerful letting go that happens in that. We sit, we walk, the world doesn't stop, it continues. Arising and passing continues, and yet you do sense in that calmness a quality of non-stickiness that begins to happen. You know, probably maybe thoughts or feelings or memories that you might have had today, perhaps in those moments when you felt quite calm. Well, the impact of those very same thoughts and feelings and memories on the first day of this retreat or in another moment when there is no calmness is pretty different. It's pretty different. So calmness actually engenders non-stickiness. It's very natural. It's also a very natural letting go. It's a kind of effortless letting go. You know, we're not thinking, I'm going to let go of this. It just simply doesn't linger so much. Now, that calmness also allows really some wisdom to develop. The wisdom that emerges is that we see that continuity and intensity and entanglement really does rely upon fuel. Fuel being added to those thoughts and feelings and images that arise. Sometimes the fuel is grasping. Sometimes the fuel is aversion. And we see that when no fuel is added, there is actually no continuity. There's no continuity. Unless there is intentional reflection. There is no continuity. So in this sense, the letting go is actually not something that's very dramatic. It feels pretty unforced, very natural. It's also a lot of wisdom in it. Something that Suzuki Roshi said, I think, of this quality of non-stickiness, of letting be, he said, renunciation is not giving up the things of this world, but accepting that they go away. Sometimes this quality of non-stickiness doesn't even feel like a letting go. It feels more like letting be. Just like letting be. Now other times, letting go actually requires both more effort and clear intention. There are two forms of wise effort that the Buddha spoke about. One form of wise effort is letting go of the unskillful and the unwholesome forces of heart and mind that have already arisen, that are present. And another form, one of the wise efforts that the Buddha spoke about, is avoiding the unwholesome and the unskillful forces of mind and heart that have not arisen. Now, why is something unwholesome or unskillful? Not necessarily because it's bad. Not because there's something implicitly wrong about it. Something's not unwholesome or unskillful because it's something to be ashamed of or something that we should hide away. Rather, something is unwholesome or unskillful if it leads to suffering and to pain in ourselves and others. Something is unwholesome and unskillful if it leads further to further division and separation. If it leads away from freedom. Now sometimes I know we have some issues around this word avoidance in our contemporary culture. You know, avoidance is almost considered to be a kind of a spiritual crime. You know, be with it, you know, no matter what it is. The way that the Buddha uses this word avoidance, I think, is a little bit different than some of the ways that we think about it. Now the difference between avoidance and suppression, and that's usually the kind of association we have, that avoidance is suppression. You know, if we avoid something, we're not getting into it. But suppression to me is an unwillingness to see something. And sometimes the way that the Buddha uses the word avoidance is actually about clear intention and clear resolution. A clear willingness to see what's going on. But an unwillingness to engage or to consent to pathways of suffering. It's a little bit like, you know, if you had to have some root canal work done. I mean, it's really unlikely that we would just go and, you know, kind of go hang out in the street till somebody was driving around in a truck with a pickaxe and say, go for it. You know, do it. Sometimes, in order to be with something well, we really need to be in touch with the qualities of balance and understanding and openness and equanimity that allow us to be with it well. And if we are not in touch with those resources, we often tend to further suffering. In terms of the unskillful, and the unwholesome, I think our own life experience is a pretty good teacher about this. We've probably seen in our own life that greed and anger, that hatred and jealousy, that judgment and lust, and really not forces of heart and mind that lead to a lot of happiness and well-being. You know, if we're really angry at somebody, and we shout at them and abuse them and call them names and vilify them, it doesn't happen that often that we get the response that they say, "Oh, I'm so grateful you said that. Please, more." You know, most often the result actually is quite a lot of separation and ill will and disconnection. When we get lost in our own judgments, our own obsessions, our own greed, it's not also that likely that in those moments we feel very much in touch with a sense of well-being and ease. When we're caught up in some huge obsession, you know, we don't say in those moments, "Oh yeah, I'm really happy. You know, I'm so spacious, so calm." Instead, most often our life experiences tell us that these forces of heart and mind essentially go in one direction. That they go towards heaviness, towards harshness, towards alienation, sometimes towards remorse. Now when we first sit in meditation, I think it often feels like we have an incredibly complex maze of feelings and thoughts and reactions and conditioning that move us and govern us. As we begin and really do deepen in calmness, we begin to see that there's a fair bit of repetition in this maze. That there are often some very repetitive threads in terms of tendencies and inclinations that runs through all this complexity. It's like the familiar pathways that we walk down a thousand, sometimes many thousands of times before, and we see it again and again and again. You know, perhaps it's the pathway of judgment. We see it again, we see it again. Perhaps it's the pathway of resistance or resentment or fear. They become very familiar to us. Sometimes, you know, we find ourselves at the front of the lunch line every day. It's more than a coincidence. Sometimes we find ourselves, you know, we've moved our seat in the meditation room 20 times. We're still on the go. Something's happening we don't like. Often these repetitive threads are ones that run through all of our lives. Now, what is needed around these pathways? What is needed around these very familiar threads? Certainly there's a need for clear comprehension, a clear calm, accepting acknowledgement of what is actually taking place, what sticks with us. But also what is needed is actually some real wisdom and some real understanding and the willingness to take the I out of these stories. The willingness to take the I out of these institutions. So instead of this story of I'm so greedy, I'm so angry, I'm so fearful, really, the calmness and the clarity and the wisdom to see simply, this is greed, this is anger, this is fear, this is aversion. That quality of calmness and willingness to be with is the first step of letting go. It's also the step that allows us to take the battle and the struggle out of these changing events and feelings. It's a way actually of stepping out of so many of the stories around them. It's also helpful to acknowledge that although many of these threads and pathways may have a very long history that possibly began even before we were ever born. You know, that some of these, this is an inheritance, some of it. Some of it has a very long and potent history, these feelings and tendencies. And actually there's a part of them that's also habit. There's a part of them, it's also habit. It's almost like these threads and tendencies, they're kind of like grooves that have been worn in the consciousness through repeated visits. So that they've become somewhat familiar resting places for us. You know, it's like people who here who always do walking meditation in the same place. You know, it's like if you look around the grounds here at the end of a retreat, you see these paths in the grass. You know, sometimes the grass has disappeared; it's been burnt away. You know, these kind of paths have been worn. Through repeated visits. Well, that's a little bit also what happens around some of these tendencies and forces and inclinations. They become places we've returned to so often, they're almost like pets. But what they are actually is that they're like institutions. They're more like institutions of self that have formed in us, that are always ready to emerge. I think there's sometimes a point where we may need to recognize that we've learnt all we're going to learn from those institutions. I mean, sometimes, you know, we need to travel those pathways a lot of times with clear comprehension, because there is insight there is wisdom there is something we need to understand there. And then we also need to recognize when we are walking those pathways, because of familiarity and because of habit, sometimes we have almost an attraction, you know, a kind of fatal attraction to those institutions. We feel like sometimes, you know, say like anger or greed, sometimes we feel like we need to keep visiting them, keep engaging in them, maybe even keep acting them out, because obviously we haven't learned what we need to learn, otherwise they wouldn't be there anymore. It is worth considering the possibility whether there really is any more to learn. You know, maybe we've explored all the dark corners of those greeds or those angers or those fears or those resistances, the judging mind, the commenting mind, you know, the evaluating mind, the comparing mind, the self-conscious mind, you know, the not good enough mind, the inadequate mind, you know, the list goes on and on. Sometimes, maybe there is, we have learned what we need to learn. And by continuing to hang out in those places, through a fatal attraction, we may be deepening the grooves, and that's a fine balance to know in ourselves when we have learnt what we need to learn and where instead habit or reaction keeps drawing us back to those places. At this point of feeling that perhaps we have learnt what we need to learn, we may actually feel inspired at this point to actually explore the path of letting go. The path of conscious renunciation, the path of not engaging, the path of not consenting. Now this requires some effort, a calm and a clear effort, not based upon aversion or reaction or resistance, but based upon wisdom. Based upon the wisdom of clearly seeing the relationship between suffering and the cause of suffering, and acting upon that wisdom. Now, wise effort at that point actually means not lingering in those pathways, not lingering in the thoughts, not lingering in the stories. Sometimes this means a very conscious and steady resolve to move our attention out of the grooves of the familiar, to commit and establish our attention in a focus, a tangible sense of connectedness outside of those grooves. Whether it is a connection with our breathing, with listening, with our bodies, with spaciousness. Now this is a kind of letting go. It's one of the ways of learning how to let go. It's not something that we do just once and then, you know, the business is finished and that's it, you know. It's never going to arise again. We let go over and over again. And this takes really a tremendous patience and trust and faith. In the Tao, it said, I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, and compassion. These three are your greatest treasures. Simple in actions and in thought, you return to the source of being. Patient with both friends and enemies, you live in harmony with the way things are. Compassionate towards yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world. What we are concerned with as we learn the art of letting go is actually about how to bring about transformation. Transformation in the shape of our heart and in the shape of our mind. Now, we do see that these grooves or institutions that are formed through patterns and conditioning and tendencies, they do shape our mind and heart in very particular ways. But we see that around fear, around greed, around anger. But when our mind is shaped by those underlying tendencies, when our mind and heart is shaped by our underlying tendencies, then in turn, that shape of the mind, you know, that is held within the container of anger or greed or fear, that in turn shapes the thoughts and the feelings that are born, doesn't it? That in turn shapes the reactions that are born. I mean, it's like if you sit down, you know, and you're having a really difficult meditation, you know, and the judgmental mind kicks in, you know, and it's, oh, you know, I'm like this and I'm like that, you know, and it's all so terrible, you know, and it's pitiful and all that business. You don't say, and I'm doing so well. No, it shapes, doesn't it? So our way of seeing ourselves and our way of seeing others. It's like, you know, if you had a square ice cube tray and you want round ice cubes and you keep pouring the water in the square ice cube tray over and over, well, in this life we are not going to get round ice cubes. You know, we're going to keep getting square ice cubes. It's the way in which the shape of our heart and mind is intrinsically linked to our perception of ourselves, to our perception of the world around us. So through the patient cultivation of letting go, of loving kindness, of compassion, we actually are learning a different shape of mind and heart. Through that learning, we begin to trust actually in the richness of letting go. In the ways that letting go, the willingness to let go and the means to let go, actually opens us to new pathways of compassion, of patience, of generosity, of clarity. It is also, I think, true that to open to those new pathways, to open to a sense of those possibilities, we actually need to have the willingness to go beyond the boundaries of the familiar. The familiar institutions of self, those familiar and well-worn grooves of inclinations of mind and heart that belong to the past. Through that patient, wise exploration of letting go, the mind and heart is changed and transformed. We learn to rest in a place of well-being and balance and understanding. There's another dimension of letting go which is cultivated very much through wise intention. The wholesome and the healing qualities of loving kindness and compassion. Cultivating those intentions within ourselves. You know, it's interesting that I think that when the Buddha speaks about wise intention, there are three. There's loving kindness, there's compassion, and there's renunciation. Now, what an interesting combination. That those three belong together, that those three are considered to be inseparable. The cultivation of loving kindness and compassion is a cultivation of goodness of heart, of harmlessness. So it leads towards, as the Buddha said, the end of pain, leads towards closeness and oneness, towards freedom. And the transformation and change that happens through meditation is actually directly linked to the development of these three intentions. They uproot the unskillful. In many ways, those three intentions need to be actually the basis of our approach and attitude to meditation. You know, if we seek for peace, we need to know how to travel this path in a peaceful way. If we seek for compassion, then compassion begins in our relationship to the present moment, in our relationship to ourselves. If we seek for loving kindness, then it's not helpful to idealize it, but to actually explore that, what that means in every moment, in our relationship to ourselves, our relationship to our practice, our relationship to others. It means the application and the embodiment of those intentions means turning away from the forces of striving, the forces of judgment, the forces of denial, the forces of greed and hatred and delusion. Sometimes these intentions have a very direct application. You know, in those moments when we're really caught in obsession, really lost in our stories, really caught up in entanglement, there are stories that are founded, perhaps, around fear or upon anger or aversion. We consciously cultivate in those moments the intention towards loving kindness. Sometimes, very formally, we do metta practice. Why? Not because those stories are wrong. Not because they shouldn't be happening, but because they are leading away from freedom, because they are leading towards suffering. In that conscious application of loving kindness and compassion, those intentions, we are treasuring, through those intentions, well-being and harmony. We are nurturing our capacity to open, to accept, to find balance. We are consciously establishing ourselves in an intention that leads towards well-being. In those moments of being lost, in obsessing and reacting, it is the touch of loving kindness that rescues us. Now, sometimes loving kindness, that attitude and that approach is cultivated through very, very consciously checking in with our intentions as we begin to practice. You know, as you begin to sit, as you begin to walk, what qualities of mind and heart are present? You know, is there lethargy? Is there forcing? Is there aversion? And then we need to ask ourselves, cultivating clear intention is a way of asking ourselves, what is this sitting in the service of? What is this walking in the service of? What being present ourselves in this moment, what is it are we committed to? What are we dedicated to? What do we love? You know, and it's really seeing that these sittings, these walkings, these moments, they're not in the service of further entanglement. They're not, we don't do this in the service of pain or conflict. But every sitting, every walking, every moment approached with clear intention is in the service of balance, in the service of understanding, in the service of compassion and happiness. It is well worth beginning each sitting, each walking, with really a clear reminder of what our intention is. Now, what is the quality that holds and supports this change of mind and heart? It is the quality of mindfulness. Mindfulness is what establishes in us in every moment, in a clear and caring attitude. Mindfulness is the connecting factor. It's the force of waking up. Mindfulness establishes us in simplicity. It brings our attention closer to the beginnings of those moments of entanglement. That's what mindfulness does. We come closer to the beginnings of those moments of entanglement. And clearly, the closer we are to the beginnings, the closer we are to the ending. As we are established in mindfulness, we come very close to those moments as our world arises on a moment-to-moment level. As the world of sights arise, the world of sounds arise, the world of sensations and feelings arises, the world of thoughts arise. This world is arising and passing on a moment-to-moment level as our sense impressions are received through the sense doors. And we come closer to those moments of arising, and we bring a simplicity to those moments. We learn to listen so well, and to find a place of receptivity with us. And instead of having any idea of, I must let go of this, or I must get rid of this, or I must make this last, we can simply listen. In those moments of arising, also, instead of trying to force letting go, because there is a simplicity there, we are actually able to ask the question, why are we holding on? Why are we holding on? And really see the ways in which when we're not clear about that question, how we further pain and conflict. And when we are clear about that question, you know, renunciation.